pink light glows behind the Tubi Originals logo. Jim Jones holds a Bible.
They were charismatic leaders who promised their adoring disciples they'd change the world.
People dance.
But all their dreams ended in despair.
Dead bodies at Jonestown.
These cults of personality aren't distant memories. They're still among us today, led by a new type of prophet.
When someone's authentic, you feel them. You have this feeling of a soul there.
In layman's terms, it was the self-help group, an organization that promised human potential.
You think, this has got to be okay. Look, there are celebrities involved. There are very, very smart people involved. I want to be part of the cool group.
He has a way of making you feel like you're very important. He's friendly and engaging, and he cares about me, and I'm special.
By the end of the 5-day course, I was all in.
It's not how far to push, it's how you push.
But soon, the group's focus shifts.
The Dalai Lama.
It evolved into, we're going to change the world. And he has the formula.
He was particularly effective in brainwashing people.
Actors, actresses, famous political figures, they're giving him millions and millions and millions.
I think I'm probably the worst coach in the world because I'm just a demon.
He could smell weakness, and he would drill down into that and crack them open.
Even though I've been your student for years and I get to spend all this time with you, I feel like there's always such a wealth that I can...
The women around him just loved him. He had something magical about him.
Turns out he likes to sleep with his followers. Like a lot. Like so much.
A couple undresses.
He was trying to create an army of women to do his bidding.
When you start to enjoy the amount of pain that you're inflicting on others, then you're no longer a victim, you're a perpetrator.
Keith Raniere was branding them like cattle with the initials KR.
A woman shows her branded skin.
He just kept going and going, pushing and pushing. He had to have more.
A crowd applauds.
This could happen to you. Never think that you are above being deceived or manipulated.
This is the true story of Nexium, the modern-day sex cult.
Nexium followers with blurred faces wave at the camera. A woman is held down for branding. Keith Raniere writes on a whiteboard. Title, Branded and Brainwashed, Inside Nexium. Text, Albany, New York 2017.
At first glance, this nondescript house tucked away in the suburbs of Albany, New York, looks like any other home on the block.
Two people appear beyond a door.
But for the select women invited inside, it's actually the epicenter of a cult. One whose leader, self-help guru Keith Raniere, is having his most devoted followers partake in a secret ritual, marking them as members for life.
Robert Gavin.
The women were told it was like a little tattoo, but Keith Raniere was branding them like cattle.
Armando Torres.
A 2-inch red hot brand would be pressed into your body 50 to 100 times over the course of half an hour.
Skin is branding.
There's no anesthesia, and there's a slow burning in the skin, excruciating pain, women squealing, burnt flesh in the air.
Page.
They're almost always on the hips, usually very close to the pubic area, right on the hip bone. Painful place to get tattoos. Super painful place to be branded.
Photos of brandings.
The women were told it was like the symbols of nature and wind, but they are branding the initials KR. He is marking these women with his initials.
No one wanted to be branded, but if they quit, then not only would they lose everything, they would have no support system. They're very deep into this group. There's a ton of stuff they have on you. They have your money. They have your images. If you don't agree with it, all of that's going to get out.
Dr. Judith Joseph.
It's not enough to have followers worship you. It's not enough to get them to sleep with you. It's not enough to get their money, to get them to do the things that you want. Now you have to take their flesh.
Raniere has no idea the brandings will ultimately lead to his downfall, despite his one-time promise of changing the world.
Ranieri Family Home Videos.
Born in Brooklyn in 1960, Ranieri demonstrates a remarkable intelligence at a very young age.
He says when he was like 2 years old, he was talking in full sentences.
He could speak three languages before he could even read and write. He was tested early on and was able to have one of the highest IQs ever recorded.
All that talent quickly goes to Ranieri's head.
Someone having talent and a high IQ, plus being brought up in an environment where they're praised for being exceptional, that's a really good recipe for these toxic, narcissistic, antisocial leaders who manipulate and use others.
His father, looking back, had said that after they told Keith he was gifted, he fully believed it. He fully bought his own bullshit. He was Christ incarnate. He was God. No one could tell him otherwise.
We follow a child.
Some say there's also a darkness to the alleged boy genius.
Rick Allen Ross.
Even as an elementary school child, he had an evil streak. Students that he attended class with feared him. They saw that he was a kind of evil seed.
But when it comes to the opposite sex, Ranieri is all charm.
Paige Wesley.
According to his parents, he constantly had girls around him, and he would kind of isolate them and then tell them each that they were the one.
He lied to them for fun. He enjoyed fooling them into believing that they were special so that he could manipulate them and sleep with them.
And he used that throughout the rest of his life.
A photo of a teenage Ranieri smiling.
At just 16, Ranieri drops out of high school and 1 year later enrolls full-time at Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute in Albany, New York.
He was a triple major in college. He was doing all of these insanely smart things. Keith talked about starting his own new form of mathematics, and more than just being a smart guy, he was very charismatic.
We were told that he was in the Guinness Book of World Record, that he was the third smartest person in the world, that he graduated college with like a 4.0.
Keith Ranieri portrayed himself as a genius, smarter than Albert Einstein, 200-something IQ.
But some say Keith's accomplishments are just self-aggrandizing lies.
He wasn't this genius he made himself out to be. In fact, I don't think he has more than average intelligence. That was an act. That was something that he put together to appear in a certain way. He was a Midland to below average student. There are two different versions of Keith. The legend that he wants you to believe, and then there is the actual dude.
Dr. Christine Marie.
He seemed to understand exactly what to say to make you think that he was the answer to all of your problems.
Keith works out in the gym.
But Ranieri does show another truer side of himself in college.
Rick Allen Ross.
I got a call from a woman who was his girlfriend when he attended Rensselaer Polytechnic. She was terrified of him. She told me that he had stalked her and was just a very frightening individual.
A photo of Keith lying in bed shirtless.
After graduating in 1982, Ranieri capitalizes on his outgoing personality by taking a job selling health, beauty, and home care products with the company Amway.
You know, we never had the money to feel really independent until we discovered Amway. Started part-time.
We're earning extra income as Amway distributors, bringing others into it.
Amway is a multi-marketing model where part of your obligation in signing on is to get more people to sign on. People would then get a percentage of whatever the next person paid that added to their income.
What some call a legal pyramid scheme.
Clifton Park, New York.
8 years later, Ranieri takes the insights he learned at Amway to open up his own pyramid scheme outside Albany. Consumers Byline, a membership-only club offering discounts on groceries and appliances.
The basic principles of consumer buy-line is that the more people that you get to buy something, the more you can bargain for lower rates, which is the principle that, like, Costco, Sam's Club, Groupon, that's how those work. You pay for a membership, they buy a certain amount of inventory, and because they're buying in bulk, they get a discount, then you get a discount.
There were a lot of incentives for bringing in new members, because the more members that you convinced to join Consumer Buy-Line, the better opportunities all of you would get.
Well, I never think of exactly how big Consumer's Buy-Line should become, but we have a constantly expanding vision.
Within a few years, Ranieri's Consumer Buy-Line enjoys massive growth, expanding to over 200,000 members and more than 150 employees. One of those employees, 28-year-old Tony Natale, becomes the company's top seller out of Rochester, New York.
Tony is completely enamored by Keith. She falls for his charms. He makes her feel special.
In 1992, Natale leaves her husband to move to Clifton Park to be closer to company headquarters and her new lover, Ranieri.
They were a dynamic couple. She just seemed to really have her act together and be confident. Keith could make you feel like the most important person in the world. And the women around him just loved him. He had something magical about him.
But it's not just Ranieri's romantic life that's thriving. Between 1990 and 1992, Consumer Buy-Line's gross receipts ballooned from $200,000 to $35 million. But like everything with Ranieri, it's all just smoke and mirrors.
If these people become affiliates, what are they going to do on the average?
Do worse.
Right. They're going to at least do this.
It became pretty apparent that Consumer Buy-Line was more about selling those memberships than actually bulk buying.
It's going to perpetuate, right. It's going to go and go, because on the average, this works.
They were selling the opportunity to sell Consumer Buy-Line. And you can only do that so many times before you run out of people to sell that to. The math just does not work out, ever.
Armando Torres.
The longer that it went on, the less sustainable that it became. And suddenly you have all these government organizations breathing down your neck, investigating, where is this money actually going?
Ranieri knows his scam's been exposed and cuts an astounding deal to save himself.
In the fall of 1996, Keith and Consumer Buy-Line settled out of court for approximately $40,000. He had defrauded all of these people, and he didn't even have to admit that he was wrong.
Ranieri was a businessman. He's going to come back. He's going to try to do this again. It's a part of his genetic makeup.
It's just another step in Ranieri's meteoric rise from alleged child prodigy to renowned ladies' man to conniving entrepreneur, laying the foundation for his greatest scheme yet.
A photo of Keith and Tony.
In 1997, a 37-year-old Ranieri and his girlfriend, Tony Natale, pivot to their next money-making venture. National Health Network, a health product store.
National Health Network is right in line with Consumer Buy-Line. Honestly, he learned one trick and then was like, let's do it again, this time with supplements. And there's a lot of multi-level marketing schemes centered around supplements.
But Ranieri has bigger aspirations. Later that year, he meets the woman who he thinks can help bring them to fruition when 43-year-old Nancy Salzman walks into his store seeking help.
Salzman comes in looking for a natural remedy for a stomach issue. Apparently, she's so constipated that she is looking for any solution to solve this issue. And that's when she gets to meet Keith.
The chance meeting will change the trajectory of the trio's lives and those of countless women to come forever.
Keith is moving on into a new venture, and Nancy Salzman can help him with this new company.
Nancy is kind of a therapist in her own right. She's involved in what some people would call pseudoscience. Therapy that really revolve around reframing to process trauma. It's also something that a lot of large group awareness trainings use to convince people that they are the masters of their own destiny.
It was at this point in my life when I contemplated giving up on personal empowerment altogether that I met a gentleman named Keith Raniere. He had the answers.
Raniere and Salzman immediately see the potential for synergizing their individual skill sets.
Dr. Judith Joseph.
Nancy becomes enamored by his talents, and she thinks that he is a genius and that he's a dynamic leader. Keith, on the other hand, is equally enamored by Nancy. He's thinking that with his dynamic personality, coupled with her skills to sway and manipulate others using her psychotherapy skills, that this is a match made in heaven.
If you think of most successful partnerships throughout history, think of Lennon and McCartney. One of them's an amazing songwriter, the other one's a charismatic performer. Together, they are unstoppable. You find the same idea with Nancy and Keith.
A photo of Nancy smiling at Keith.
In 1998, the pair joined forces to form ESP, the very first iteration of what will later become Nexium.
ESP is Executive Success Programs, and it's a company that's designed to help people identify what their goals and objectives are in life and to reach those goals and objectives.
It is a program that you can take that will give you a professional and personal edge. It focuses on what Keith and Nancy called rational inquiry, which is sort of piecing out how your life is supposed to be.
Boyle Lazier.
He seemed to sell a message that people wanted to hear. Everybody wants their life to improve. Everybody wants to be happy. The problem is, if you listen to him, it sounded like gobbledygook.
Children need to become adults. That is, in our bodies, they're mature. We can breed, we can go out and produce, we can sustain ourselves.
It was Nancy who did a lot of the work of taking his philosophical, if you will, discussions and boiling it down into a training manual to teach people how to run these workshops.
Well, Nancy was vital. I mean, she was, in a sense, the second in command, and I don't think he could have done it without her. I don't think he really had the smarts or the wherewithal.
Raniere and Salzman initially market the program to business executives.
They come to your office, your store, your corporate headquarters, and they say, we can make your people more productive if you have them take our seminars. We'll offer you a discount, but you should have everyone sign up, and this is what you'll get out of it. He's selling it as a team-building scenario.
These workshops cost thousands of dollars for self-improvement, self-awareness.
Keith Raniere is acting like you're privileged. This is a wonderful thing. You are going to learn tools for your success. These are self-improvement seminars that will change your life. And then that evolved into, we're going to change the world. And Keith Raniere has the formula. He has the philosophy that will change the planet.
Thank you.
Soon, Raniere and Salzman rebrand their organization with a name destined for infamy. Nexium.
It is sort of a construct of the same word in Greek that means slave or indentured person.
The fact that Keith is so brazen about the way that he names the cult Nexium, it shows that he is hiding in plain sight.
It's an ominous harbinger of the next step in Raniere's plan.
Robert Gavin, legal affairs reporter.
It emerges quickly that to be in Nexium is to live in a world based on the beliefs of Keith Raniere, who can come across very charming to a lot of people. You don't see the power behind this throne that a lot of these women in Nexium are going to be subjected to cruelty, shame, and punishment.
And it's with a twisted sense of pleasure in some ways.
A web of photos with Keith in the center.
Nexium was a quote-unquote, you know, human development company. In layman's terms, a self-help group. An organization that promised human potential.
The tools we use in ESP are designed in a way that really helps us understand ourselves better.
The NXIVM curriculum was based on the teachings and the philosophies of Keith Raniere. You would pay thousands of dollars for courses to increase your potential. Nancy Salzman is the face of it and is able to sell this with a smile on her face.
Raniere and Salzman even adopt new names for their leadership positions.
Paige Wesley.
Nancy, his number two at that point, is the prefect, which essentially is head student.
She is the senior student who is authorized to give discipline.
A video of women talking to Keith.
Keith was only to be referred to as Vanguard.
A Scientology building.
Much like in Scientology, LRH was the commandant or the admiral. Rainier is Vanguard. Everyone is underneath him.
If he's called by the birth name, then he's just a mere mortal. But a one-word name or a mysterious symbol, what this does on an unconscious level is it tells the members that they are merely human and this person is special. And so it's really a form of psychological manipulation for him to transform and evolve into this new title of Vanguard.
Keith teaches a class.
NXIVM's classes attract those looking to excel in their career or simply get more out of life.
Kelly Teal.
I had been seeking the answer to how to be a better person, how to be more enlightened. I felt like I was really missing something. And then someone introduced me to NXIVM. And I thought, okay, well, I'll try that. Why not?
Kelly signs up for a 5-day session.
When I started looking at the classes, I thought it was kind of expensive. And when I first went to my first 5-day, I was greeted by a bunch of really nice people. They were just so interested in helping me to learn the curriculum.
Members hold brochures.
At first, I thought it was a little weird, but then, you know, it kind of felt good. I felt special. The introductory classes basically focus on the main tools of NXIVM. They were teaching us that when we're always comfortable, we're not growing, and that there's no growth if there isn't pain.
Comfort is like an addiction. The more we indulge in this addiction, the more we have to lose.
If you are not uncomfortable, you are not working on anything. Your life should be a life of discomfort if you want to grow. If you don't want to grow, hey, satiate away, your choice.
The classes are named intensives for good reason.
Show up at 8 and may not leave until 8 or 9 o'clock at night. So it was an intensive amount of time with very few breaks.
Keith writes exercise and diet on board.
You were just head down in the curriculum. I felt great. Everyone around me was excited. They all felt great. We all felt like we were learning.
But the members don't realize there's a secret purpose behind these marathon sessions.
When you force human beings to sit in a room for hours doing tasks that are psychologically burdensome, you're breaking them down. You mess with their sense of reality, with their sense of time, and they start to lose willpower. They stop feeling as if they're individuals, and they start feeling as if they're not that important, that they're less than human, so that you can ultimately control them.
One of NXIVM's most effective techniques is called exploration of meaning, or EM.
Basically, an EM is to help you look at a bad habit that you want to break and figure out where it came from and break that belief.
A woman walks up to Nancy.
But some find the EM technique extremely dangerous if not administered by a mental health professional.
Rick Allen Ross.
What Raniere did is he cobbled together his program. He wasn't an original thinker. In fact, Scientology was a major source for what he called the exploration of meaning, or the EMs. That was very much like what Scientology calls auditing, where there's this kind of Q&A to dig down and identify issues. It's a way of knowing all the vulnerabilities of an individual, and it can be a very practical tool of control, making them feel very broken and very open to you solving their problems, you giving them answers. And then the next step is you lock them in.
Kelly Teal.
By the end of the 5-day course, I have to say I was all in. I was hungry for purpose. And so this seemed like a great opportunity. If you take a few tests and answer a few questions and sign some papers, you can become a coach. And then after that, you start earning stripes.
People can come, they can take classes as much as they want forever and ever and ever. They can satiate in our curriculum. But what Vanguard has wanted us to do for a very long time is have people working the stripe method.
Stripes that are added to the sashes all students, coaches, and instructors are required to earn.
As you went up the ladder, so to speak, you got a different sash with a different color that showed that you achieved certain levels.
It's very much just cribbing completely from the belts of different martial arts programs.
You start off as a student. Students have a white sash, and you've started to earn stripes after a while. And then you can become a coach. Coaches get a yellow sash, and then eventually you earn enough stripes to become a proctor.
Our new one-stripe full proctor.
Allison Mack on stage.
While it sounds easy, advancement is actually quite difficult.
You kind of have to buy your way through the ranks up to the top. It's very similar to when you talk to people in Scientology who have had to buy their way up the bridge. It's a similar structure, just not as many steps.
However, the rules were constantly changing. You're constantly being critiqued and constantly being told, you're not good enough to move up. You are in the way of yourself and you're not growing enough. They would say, you need to take the curriculum again. You're missing this part. It's kind of like the hamster in the wheel. You're never going to get the genius.
Video of members wearing sashes.
It really is a psychological manipulation because you can devote your entire life, your resources, your time, your family, and you'll never get what you came for.
They were being pressured to move up with the sashes, with the levels, and they had to keep feeding money into it to take more workshops. And these workshops were $8,000, $10,000.
You want to change your life? That's not going to come cheap.
Both members and coaches are encouraged to bring others into the fold.
It was a constant conversation about getting people in. And we didn't use the word recruit. We used the word enroll. Never use the word recruit, we were told.
Keith and Nancy clap in slow motion.
And while recruiters are promised a commission for new members, the money never seems to materialize.
Tabby Chapman.
I had enrolled 9 people, you know, but I didn't get any money from that at all. Because the only way you could get money from it is if you had enrolled the right amount of people within the first 30 to 45 days. So only a small amount of people would get paid.
Everybody at the top needed to get paid. Nobody at the bottom was getting paid. So we were all working for free.
In my view, it was at best a Ponzi scheme financially. They thought they were buying into something really positive. They were given very misleading information. They were deceived. It was very much like a bait and switch con.
The Hollywood sign.
NXIVM's reach even extends to Hollywood.
There was a very small center in Los Angeles where the teachings would happen, and that's where they recruit people from.
Video of Allison Mack crying.
They targeted actors, actresses, musicians, people who are looking for an in into the industry that requires a lot of networking. And so they're like, well, if all of these actors are there, if I join, then I can talk to them. Maybe this director is here. It's a way for me to make friends and kind of get to know an inner circle of people.
Including Sarah Edmondson from the sci-fi series Stargate SG-1, Battlestar Galactica's Nikki Klein, and Allison Mack, star of the CW series Smallville.
Kind of leads me to my next question, which has to do with authenticity.
You know, authenticity and creativity are an interesting match. Mm-hmm. We don't like to think of ourselves as robots because we're not robots. So what does it mean to be authentic? When someone's authentic, you feel them. You have this feeling of a soul there.
She cries.
Ranieri and his co-founder, Nancy Salzman, quickly realize the entertainment industry is a gold mine.
A crew prepares to film.
Cults typically target people who have resources. They tend to target influential people because people who have talents, who are attractive, you know, they can recruit a lot of members.
Church of Scientology logo.
It's exactly what Scientology did with Tom Cruise and John Travolta. They knew that that was going to be essentially valuable currency for them in trying to navigate getting new members.
Dr. Christine Marie.
There's a concept called social proof. When you see other people basically endorsing the program or being a part of it, you let down some of your critical thinking and you think, this has got to be okay. Look, there are celebrities involved. There are very, very smart people involved. And if they're involved, I want to be part of the cool group.
The influx of new members and its growing credibility within the celebrity class allows NXIVM to grow beyond Albany, New York.
They expanded centers throughout North America into Vancouver, Canada, Mexico, around the United States.
Paige Wesley.
Actors, actresses, famous political figures in Mexico, they're giving him millions of dollars. Millions and millions and millions to pay their way up, to get different color sashes, to go from white to green to orange to whatever. And it's all going straight into his pocket.
NXIVM's leader, Keith Raniere.
Kelly Teal.
He was this leader who had created this curriculum that was changing people's lives. He was amazingly smart and had the answers to everything. And everybody revered him. He would come in the evenings sometimes to the auditorium, and he would speak to us. It was sort of like he was a rock star showing up to an event. He sort of had that feeling of a religious person, that energy of end all be all.
Particularly for female members.
Dr. Marie.
The women around him just loved him. I wasn't attracted to him, but he had something magical about him.
People always mention Keith's charm and his charisma. Keith has a way of making you feel like you're very important while still being in control. And the more time you spend with him, the more you're like, he's friendly and engaging, and he cares about me, and I'm special, and he understands what I'm going through. And none of that is real. It is what he's trying to make you believe. It's exactly the same as the girls he was charming as a teenager. It's just on a macro scale with a lot more money.
A photo of Keith and Tony.
In 1999, Raniere ends his nearly decade-long relationship with Tony.
And Keith told me that Tony wasn't there anymore, that they broke up, and I was quite surprised.
Tony doesn't realize that there are other females.
Turns out he likes to sleep with his followers, like a lot, like so much.
Keith grabs and kisses women.
He had a habit of singling out women and then bringing them into kind of his close inner circle, making them feel like they had a sexual relationship that was just the two of them, but then at the same time maintaining sexual relationships with multiple other women, at some points, dozens of other women.
This is a person who has convinced so many different people that he has an entire new way of being. He has a presence that is unbeatable, and there are hundreds of thousands of people who are desperately trying to get around him. So it makes sense that he got a lot of the attention that he wanted.
Did you notice in one of the crowd shots, one of the women wasn't wearing panties?
Incredibly, some members of Keith's inner circle have no problem sharing their leader. In fact, they encourage others to join.
Dr. Christine Marie.
Keith told me that he talked to all the ladies in the inner circle, and even though his dance card was very full, he had one slot available for me, and I could join the inner circle. I declined.
In the spring of 2000, Raniere meets a new woman when Nancy Salzman introduces him to an acquaintance, financial planner Barbara Boucher. Raniere has no idea Boucher will become one of his greatest adversaries and help expose NXIVM as a modern-day cult.
Clifton Park, New York.
In 2002, NXIVM leader Keith Raniere meets his wealthiest followers yet. 25-year-old Sarah Bronfman and her 23-year-old sister, Claire.
The sisters smile for a photo.
The Bronfman sisters are the Seagram's liquor heiresses. They are loaded beyond your wildest dreams. They were almost specifically targeted by Keith.
They are immediately drawn to who he is, his charisma, and kind of the health and wellness emotionally and physically version of Nexium that he is selling.
Nexium's pitch was that it was an ethical organization that was going to take the world to a higher realm. They had a vision that of the reordering of human existence. Very similar to Scientology.
Women listen and nod their heads.
It's a vision that resonates with the sisters.
They had grown up in the shadow of their father, Edgar Bronfman, who was an icon in the Jewish community. This was a man who was very accomplished, who was well-respected. And then you have these two daughters who really seem like lost souls. And this Nexium thing gave them a sense of purpose. I'm going to change the world. I can be as great as my father. I don't have to just live in his shadow. I can make the world a better place.
A gray stone mansion.
The Bronfmans purchase a home near Nexium's headquarters outside Albany, New York, to be closer to Ranieri and the organization. Claire works on the business side of Nexium, while Sarah starts the company's VIP programs and serves on ESP's executive board.
Robert Gavin.
The Bronfmans have something Keith Ranieri can use, and that's money. They represent a huge amount of financial power that Keith has not seen before.
And once Keith got them into his control, they were able to bankroll the entire organization.
The heiresses start paying $2 million here, $1 million here, $5 million here to work their way up and support what they believe is his mission to basically heal the world.
There's tens of millions of dollars being poured into Nexium. Without the Bronfman money, I think we could certainly wonder if Nexium ever becomes what it became.
When Edgar Bronfman learns his girls are bankrolling Ranieri, he is incensed.
Quickly, he starts to realize something's wrong here. This might be a cult.
And he goes on a rampage to try and out Keith.
Photo of Edgar.
Edgar and his daughters have a falling out, and he quickly becomes one of the first public enemies of the group.
Sarah holds a microphone.
The Bronfman sisters aren't the only ones under Ranieri and Nexium's spell.
Headshot of woman.
In November 2002, 35-year-old environmental consultant Kristen Marie Snyder pays $7,000 to enroll in a 16-day personal development course hosted by Nexium co-founder Nancy Salzman in Anchorage, Alaska.
We float above Anchorage.
2 months later, Snyder travels to Nexium's headquarters to meet with Keith Ranieri and other members of the group.
Keith holds a marker and looks to the side.
When Snyder returns to her home in Alaska, those closest to her claim her personality has been altered.
She started behaving strangely. She started to believe that she was responsible for the Challenger explosion, which of course she was not. She had no connection to it. That's a delusion. But she believed it wholeheartedly.
Photo of Kristen near a river.
Kristen then signs up for a second 16-day Nexium course. But these new sessions seemingly only increase her mental health issues.
A woman holds a microphone.
Nexium, for all that it purports to be about wellness and emotional wellness and personal wellness, is not equipped to help someone having a true mental health crisis. And that's where groups like that are the most dangerous, where people need actual help and they are instead feeding them craziness that will make things worse.
And the situation does get worse. On February 6th, 2003, following an all-day Nexium seminar at an Anchorage hotel, Kristen gets into her SUV and just drives away.
She drove 120 miles into the Alaskan wilderness.
Armando Torres.
In her truck, they did find a suicide note that expressed that she had been brainwashed, that she had no feeling anymore, that her insides were rotting. Just really horrific stuff.
Notebook in front of us.
I attended a course called Executive Success Programs, aka NXIVM, based out of Anchorage, Alaska, and Albany, New York. I was brainwashed, and my emotional center of the brain was killed / turned off. I still have feeling in my external skin, but my internal organs are rotting. Please contact my parents if you find me or this note. I am sorry, life. I didn't know I was already dead. May we persist into the future.
A photo of Kristen smiling. Rick Allen Ross.
Kristen Snyder had a master's degree. She was in her 30s, highly accomplished, and she ended up dead because of NXIVM, in my opinion.
She was psychologically broken down to the point where she didn't know reality anymore, and it is believed that she likely committed suicide.
No need to search for my body.
Tabby Chapman.
Kristen Snyder disappeared off the face of the earth.
I've had people killed because of my beliefs and because of their beliefs and because of things that I've said. Mm-hmm. And I'm mindful of that.
In a group as shadowy as NXIVM, there's always going to be questions about what happened here. Did she commit suicide? Was she killed? The Kristen Marie Snyder story is horrifying. Someone who went to NXIVM to improve her life and then unfortunately decided to end it.
A newspaper roll runs through a printer.
It won't be long before an old NXIVM foe lifts the veil of death and deceit clouding the cult for all the world to see.
October.
In 2003, news of NXIVM's notoriety hits the radar of Forbes magazine. The publication reaches out to Keith Raniere and his co-founder, Nancy Salzman.
Keith and Nancy think that they're getting interviewed for a very flattering article on their executive success programs. Because, I mean, you're helping so many people, right? This is obviously their time to shine. What they maybe didn't know was that Forbes was also talking to a couple of former members, and also Edgar Bronfman.
Edgar Bronfman, the billionaire head of Seagram's Liquors, who feels his daughters have been conscripted into a cult and swindled of millions.
Tree branches are filled with yellow and red leaves.
That October, the growing chorus of suspicion surrounding Raniere and NXIVM reaches a crescendo when Forbes publishes this explosive cover story entitled Cult of Personality.
The article comes out, and it's not the glowing review that they were expecting. There are a lot of things that are being alleged. Money is being stolen left and right. Money is being moved around. The aura of success that these people are putting on, it's a fraud. People who try to leave start being tracked by people. And even worse, people who are still in it realize that Keith is basically sleeping with everybody.
Is that any good? Is that one? Have you read that one? No, I haven't read it. I know about that particular book. Some of these books I know about and some of them I've read.
Keith has all these books in his executive library. He comes off like he's this intellectual person, but it's a library he used to also have sex with dozens of women.
And that's not all the Forbes article lays bare.
People close to Keith Raniere will tell you he's pretty lazy. He's a guy that sleeps in during the day. So if you want to get close to Keith, you have to attend midnight volleyball games, because that's where Keith's going to be. At the volleyball game, Raniere was the person of power. He's the king. He gets to sit there like the fat lion in the, you know, in the jungle. At the end of the day, it was his world. They were all going to live in it, whether they liked it or not.
Keith moonwalks.
The article starts raising a lot of red flags. Maybe this group that so many people have been a part of, maybe it's a cult.
Robert Gavin.
Edgar Bronfman's quoted where he says, "I think it's a cult." And that statement absolutely infuriates Keith Raniere.
Keith stares at someone off screen.
But the most damaging attacks target the validity of the company's classes and methodology.
Kelly Teal.
There's very little time to talk to your loved ones. There's very little time to eat enough food, let alone, you know, use the bathroom. It isolates the students from a husband or a loved one calling them and saying, I haven't heard from you all day. Are you okay? Is this a cult? Oh, no, it's not a cult. It's not a cult. We're just really, really busy. You know, we're just so busy.
She rolls her eyes.
The idea that it was a cult never crossed my mind, because in my head, a cult was Charles Manson and dead chickens and things like that.
Dr. Joseph.
There's a saying that nobody joins a cult because initially cults do not present themselves as being cult-like. Initially, they will seem very warm and they have these ideals where they talk about changing the world and they entice followers to join something that could change humanity.
Yes, it's isolation, it's alienation from people you knew before, because the more and more and more you get enveloped in it, you feel very trapped. And that's when it gets even more difficult to leave, because you can't imagine life away from that.
Forbes cover is shown.
While the article turns an ugly spotlight on the group, the damage is limited.
The world wasn't ready to hear it yet. People viewed it as them voluntarily giving this money. And I'm sorry that you gave your money to a scam, but how is that our problem? And so eventually people kind of forget about NXIVM. But regardless, Keith is paranoid after that article comes out. He is terrified of what's going to happen. He thinks that it's going to completely ruin his entire empire.
Ranieri quickly sets out to rebuild NXIVM's public image. In 2009, he once again turns to his two largest benefactors, Sarah and Claire Bronfman, for help.
Robert Gavin.
The Bronfman sisters are a huge part of the NXIVM story because their financial backing is able to give him sort of respectability to be able to say, wow, there's a lot of money behind this guy. He's got the Bronfman sisters there. The Bronfmans are key. They're lending Keith money, giving him millions of dollars, donating monies to something called the Ethical Foundation.
The World Ethical Foundation, a newly created nonprofit whose mission is to promote the understanding and application of compassionate ethics.
Tabby.
They invited some world leaders to this consortium where people were sitting around and brainstorming all these big, powerful ideas. The tickets were $1,000 for like 2 days. It's absurd, right?
They're trying to make it look like NXIVM is a good philanthropic organization. They're not the only people that do this. Scientology does this too. They have an entire arm of people who go to third world countries and try and build dams or hand out water bottles. And they then turn around and say, see, Scientology is good. This is how we're clearing the planet.
Ranieri knows the more credibility he gains for the summit, the more credibility he'll gain for NXIVM. So he courts one of the world's most famous religious leaders to attend.
They were organizing a visit from His Holiness, the Dalai Lama, and he had agreed to come. And then at some point, he had heard news or got news that NXIVM was a cult. So he backed out of it.
Footage of group members smiling and chatting on a private flight.
After that, Nancy, Sarah, and Keith, who never traveled anywhere, got on their private plane and went to visit His Holiness, the Dalai Lama, in person. And whatever agreement they made, he decided that he was going to come back. I'm told that they gave him a large donation.
A packed audience watches the Dalai Lama at the Palace Theater in Albany on May 6, 2009.
The Dalai Lama did a lecture in Albany in which he implied that the media was wrong and that Keith Ranieri was good.
The media people should have long nose as long as...
Nancy and the Bronfman sisters laugh.
And he gave him an award. He put a scarf around his neck. This is a Nobel Prize winner. And he's giving Keith Ranieri the appearance of respectability by imbuing him with his aura.
I mean, that's the kind of thing that is so impressive to people. Like, wow, he must really be incredible, right?
This is a huge coup for NXIVM.
The Forbes expose is soon forgotten, and Keith Raniere rides high once again, all thanks to the continued benevolence of the Bronfman sisters. But soon, Raniere will face a bigger scandal closer to home. A revolt from his own female members. For 9 years, NXIVM member and Keith Raniere lover Barbara Boucher has looked the other way when it came to her leader's numerous paramours. But in 2009, she reaches her breaking point for a different reason.
Barbara is financially ruined by Keith.
Raniere has drained his lover's account of roughly $1.6 million, trading stock in his name.
I don't know that she'll ever financially recover, at least not to where she was beforehand.
Women pack bags.
That April, Boucher and 8 other women in Raniere's inner circle decide to leave the group for good.
They were like, he's lying to all of us, and we're going to make him pay. They then kind of make it their mission to tell people about what's going on, to try and reveal what's happening.
The NXIVM Nine, as they're called, claim the organization is psychologically abusive. Despite the sensational nature of the claims, few take notice.
There were reports in the Times Union for years about NXIVM. Nothing was done. Nobody seemed to want to go after this huge group, which is now widely viewed as a cult. And many attorneys in the Capital Region were either afraid to go after them or were actually representing them.
Tabby Chapman, former member.
The NXIVM Nine were powerful people in our organization. So when they left, they created this sort of exodus. A lot of people left at that point. I didn't leave because I believed Keith's story.
Despite the string of defections, Raniere is still riding high, thanks in large part to a devoted group of followers such as Smallville actress Allison Mack.
Allison poses for photographers.
Allison Mack is someone who has been successful. She was on a long-running TV show in a main series role. She's very good-looking. She's visible. People know her name. She's kind of the perfect person that they would want for a group like this.
Mack is not only one of Raniere's many lovers, but one of his most devoted followers and a top NXIVM recruiter.
The recruiters are very good at what they do, what we call love bombing. They will make you feel very special. You'll think you've just met the greatest group of people. You'll see other people there that you know and respect. And so then they'll ask you to come back. And because you had such a great time and because they made you feel so good, you feel a little obligated as well as curious to come back again.
Mack first joins NXIVM 9 years earlier in 2006 after attending a 2-day session of a program called Jeunesse.
Video of Allison.
Jeunesse, the women's organization that I work with, we use these tools and these structures in order to organize situations and circumstances for women to come together and create incredible relationships.
Kelly Teal.
Jeunesse was a curriculum that was very much geared toward women to help them become more empowered, more measurable, to help them understand who they were as a woman.
When men find out really how awful we are, it's humbling, it is scary, we don't know what to do. And what you come to realize with Jeunesse is the dance that we all do. And ideally, people start to divest themselves from that dance. But you have to see the dance before you can divest yourself from it.
Allison Mack.
It's incredible. When I came and I found out about Jeunesse, the curriculum for women that you had developed, I felt very relieved because I felt like I knew what I didn't want to be.
Jeunesse, though, oddly, was really not about women's success. It was about more how to be subservient, and it conveyed a lot of very negative messages.
Kelly Teal.
It was extremely misogynistic at the end of the day.
Often you'll have a person who was, we'll call it, abused by a father. There's one instance I know in particular. And the girl really loved it, enjoyed it. There wasn't a single part of it she didn't like until she recognized by society that it was abuse.
Keith says during one of the Jeunesse sessions, rape isn't rape. unless you decide that you're a victim.
So she became frigid in later life. She didn't enjoy sex, didn't want sex, didn't like anything to do with men in particular.
It's their fault if you think you're a victim. Why don't you just lay back and enjoy it?
And if it were in a different culture, if it were in Rome or Greece, it would have been totally okay and the person wouldn't have been frigid and would have had a perfectly fine adult life.
In a sense, it gives him permission to do anything because there are no victims. So do you feel that you're being victimized by me? That's an example of your negative mindset, of you being a suppressive person. And so he could abuse people, he could exploit people, but they could not be his victims.
Working for Janice is grounding and satisfying and humbling and wonderful. We're all working together and no one is ever punished and no one is ever told that they're wrong or they're bad. And the most important thing in working on Janice is the relationships in Janice.
We float above a city and a river.
In 2015, Ranieri creates an offshoot of Janesque called DOS, an acronym for the Latin phrase Dominus Obsequius Sororium.
Dominus Obsequius Sororium, DOS, roughly translated, means Lord Master of the Obedient Female Companions. DOS is an organization of entirely female members, with one exception, whose presence in the group is kept secret to most of the women entering. And he's the leader of the group, Keith Ranieri.
Dr. Joseph.
It was framed as this sisterhood, this secret sorority, where only a select few people could join. You had to be special. You had to be mentored. However, you know, the mentorship was really a type of relationship between a slave and a slave owner.
Again, it's a pyramid-designed organization in which you have masters and slaves. You have eight women who are known as first-line masters. Each one of those masters has their own slaves. And then those slaves are masters to lower-ranking slaves. And at the very top of the DOS pyramid is Ranieri, who is commanding these women to do things that affect their everyday. Keith Ranieri is the quote-unquote grandmaster, the top of the pyramid.
Women sit in a circle.
Entree into DOS is invitation only, usually at the bequest of Ranieri's top recruiter, actress Allison Mack, herself a first-line master. Allison even recruits one of Nexium's only black members, then 26-year-old nonprofit co-founder Michelle Hatchett.
The fact that she was able to get African Americans to be a part of this slave master culture shows that she was a deeply cruel person. And, you know, perhaps this individual felt humiliated and ashamed, but the group mentality is just so powerful that it's hard for people to reject these claims and these notions because they don't want to be rejected from this group.
Michelle, for her part, declares that she entered DOS willingly and openly accepts the master-slave roles.
A woman takes selfies.
To ensure a new slave's loyalty, they must provide what first-line masters call collateral.
Collateral was things that would be embarrassing or incriminating if they were released publicly. Some people provided letters of embarrassing things they had done. Some of them provided explicit photographs or videos. Jim Jones had his followers write letters basically saying that they had done crimes that he would then hold and threaten to release if they left. Scientology, when they perform auditing, that's you giving them information that they then keep in a file. It's very similar. You're a lot less likely to leave if you know that your collateral could be released.
Incredibly, some women have no problem providing the collateral.
People agree to do things if they think it betters themselves, if they feel as if the person speaking to them perhaps has an enlightened sense of understanding of the world that they're lacking. And so they're willing to forfeit something if they feel as if their sacrifice is going to pay off.
Text messages.
But collateral is only one aspect of DOS. Slaves in the program must obey all of their master's orders, which soon become sexual.
A woman's dress falls to the floor.
Ultimately, many of these slaves are told that they need to seduce Keith, and that Keith supposedly doesn't know about it. And more slaves end up getting this assignment. And Keith Raniere is sleeping with these women, and he's sleeping with their masters. And many of them go on to say that they didn't think they had a choice.
DOS does turn into sex trafficking, almost immediately, too. Keith is identifying women that he wants and likes, and then some of the women in DOS are then procuring those women. And he then isolates them and brings them into the fold. In some cases, it's women from over the Canadian border and the Mexican border, which is trafficking. Some of them he identifies when they're underage, but then waits for them to come of age before starting a sexual relationship to, quote unquote, be legal.
Photo of Keith looking down.
The story of one alleged grooming in particular is chilling.
Daniela and her family were members of NXIVM in Mexico. And they were able to rise through the ranks so much so that eventually Keith decided that they were worthy and told them that they should move and relocate to Albany, where the NXIVM headquarters were. Keith has this family wrapped around his finger. Anything that he says is taken as gospel.
A girl's hair blows in the wind.
At the time, Daniela is just 17 years old. And Keith Raniere is in his 40s.
A man touches a woman's abdomen.
Then when Daniela turns 18, allegedly Raniere forces himself on her.
In some states, there's the age of consent. Some states it's 17. Some parts of the world it's 12. Some parts of the world it's right. So what's abuse in one area is not abuse in another. But what is it really? Abuse is, is the person a child or is the person adult-like?
But Raniere's abuse against the teen doesn't end there.
Paige Wesley.
Daniela's story is heartbreaking. She's kept in a room with no windows, no interaction, no books, no phones, no TVs, nothing. She is occasionally fed, but Keith likes thin women, and so she is not fed nearly enough, especially for a growing girl.
In addition to sex, Keith uses other weapons, like so-called readiness drills, to keep his followers off balance and in check.
Readiness drill was a text message that was sent from Keith Raniere to the first line masters in DOS. It could be 3 in the afternoon, it could be 3 in the morning, anytime during the day. Keith Raniere sends that out, and they all have to respond, everyone, the low slaves to their masters, and ultimately back to Keith. Because if you didn't respond, you know that's going to be a breach. You know, you're going to be subjected to a punishment.
Punishment could range anywhere from taking a cold shower to standing outside in the snow to paddling with leather handles. And Keith tried to make sure the paddling was done severely.
A woman eats salad.
Other punishments include restricting members' food and sleep.
A woman pulls her waistband.
Keith prefers very skinny women. So they were regimented to 800 calories or less a day, which is starvation level. Workouts 5 days a week. They usually only got 4 to 5 hours of sleep. These women were incredibly malnourished and exhausted state, which makes you highly susceptible because you're hungry and tired.
A woman yawns.
The idea of DOS was that this was a group of totally committed women, committed to each other, and they were an empowerment group, which is the antithesis of what they really were, the sexual slaves of Keith Raniere.
And soon, Raniere will take a shocking step to ensure his slaves never leave. For the women of NXIVM's inner sorority, DOS, slavery to their masters and ultimate leader, Keith Raniere, is about more than sex. To prove their commitment, each member must take part in a secret ritual held at DOS leader Allison Mack's house. Some of the women do not fully understand what's about to take place.
Dr. Lalek.
A friend comes to you and says, come with me tonight. There's a little ritual. of kind of initiating you into DOS. So on the surface, it seems okay. You go there. You're nervous. Everybody's told to take their clothes off. You're even more nervous.
Women undress.
But then you're all extremely vulnerable because you're not going to run out the door naked.
A machine is turned on.
And you're told that you're going to get a tattoo as a symbol of, you know, being part of this. And so it all sounds very inconsequential, very harmless.
The women were told it was like a little tattoo. But Keith Raniere was branding them like cattle.
A woman's arms are held down as she's branded with a cauterizing tool.
This is at Keith Raniere's direct order. Keith Raniere is on tape telling Allison Mack how he wants this done.
January 9th, 6:59 a.m., talking about branding on the wall.
I think doing the actual brand in an orderly fashion, having a certain ritualization, the person who's being branded should be completely nude and sort of held to the table like a sort of almost like a sacrifice. I don't know if that's a feeling of submission, you know, legs spread straight, like being feet being held to the side of the table, hands probably above the head being held almost like tied down like a sacrificial whatever.
A woman moves her legs as she is held down.
There's no anesthesia. And there's a slow burning in the skin, excruciating pain.
The woman grimaces.
Lauren Salzman described it of like hearing women squealing. And there's burnt flesh in the air.
Keith and Allison walk together.
And the person should ask to be branded.
Okay.
Should say, please brand me, it would be an honor, or something like that. Not an honor I want to wear for the rest of my life. I don't know.
Okay.
And they should probably say that before they're held down, so it doesn't seem like they're being coerced.
Okay.
Armando Torres.
If they quit, then not only would they lose everything, they would have no support system. They're very deep into this group. There's a ton of stuff they have on you. They have your money. They have your images. If you don't agree with it, all of that's going to get out.
Could also, of course, videoing it from different angles or whatever gives collateral.
Mm-hmm. Someone rubs a finger over a brand.
They're almost always on the hips, usually very close to the pubic area, right on the hip bone. Painful place to get tattoos, super painful place to be branded.
Photos of brandings.
The women were told it was like the symbols of nature and wind. But they are branding the initials KR. He is marking these women with his initials.
Dr. Lalek.
So you can see in a situation like that, it's going to be even harder to leave.
The branding is another example of a psychopath wanting more control. It's not enough to have followers worship you. It's not enough to get them to sleep with you. It's not enough to get their money, to get them to do the things that you want. Now you have to take their flesh.
Camera stands pointed at table.
That ordeal was, in a sense, the culmination of this long process of seduction, this long process of indoctrination that went on and on and on, and it ground out their ability to critically and independently think. Keith Raniere, he just kept going and going, pushing and pushing. He weaponized his women, his followers, very much like Charlie Manson.
I think at the end of the day that he was trying to create an army of women through DOS to do his bidding.
But Raniere's secret sect will soon be his undoing.
The branding is the part of DOS and the part of NXIVM that ultimately brings Keith Raniere down.
A door closes. Clifton Park, New York.
Despite the pain and humiliation of the branding ritual, it's estimated that hundreds of women become members of NXIVM's secret sorority, DOS, led by Smallville actress Allison Mack.
Robin Boyle Leisure.
The question is, why did they stay? Why not just say no? Why do we stay in bad relationships when we know it's a bad relationship and we know we should be getting out and we're still there? It's the same thing with cults.
For Kelly Thiel, that realization comes in June 2017.
I got a phone call from Canada. A woman called me and she said, "Have you seen the Frank Report?" And I said, "What are you talking about?" She said, "You have to read the Frank Report. You're not going to believe what's going on." So she sent it to me. I clicked the link. The Frank Report came up, and it was an article talking about Keith Raniere and this thing called DOS.
The Frank Report is an online blog created by the private investigator Frank Parlato. On June 5th, 2017, Parlato publishes this article entitled "Branded Slaves and Master Raniere," revealing Nexium's branding rituals to the world.
Kelly Thiel.
That was the beginning of me grappling with I was possibly in a cult.
A Frank Report headline.
The expose is based in part on the anonymous account of Stargate SG-1 actress Sarah Edmondson, a branded member of DOS. Eventually, Edmondson reconsiders her anonymity and goes to a bigger platform. This time on the record, when she appears on the front of the New York Times in October 2017.
The New York Times breaks this story about DOS and that Sarah Edmondson is interviewed talking about DOS and everything involved.
And the big bombshell is on the front page, you have Sarah Edmondson's branding for the world to see. This isn't just a group of weirdos trying to change their lives. This is something really dark and messed up.
Tabby.
When Sarah Edmondson happened, I shattered. I could not maintain a sense of reality. I had to go on medical leave from my job. I had to be on like 4 different medications to try to like maintain my sense of self again. I had been duped. I left. I just couldn't spend one more minute in there.
Kelly.
I decided to leave because I realized that I was in a cult. Like, I realized this is for real. I can't justify this anymore. No matter what anyone says, the stories that they're trying to cover up, my sanity was at stake. I don't really have the choice to stay anymore. Like, I can't justify this anymore. And I still had friends that were still members. They were still in and still are.
I was gobsmacked. I thought, whoa, Keith Raniere is really an evil mastermind. When I learned Keith had had sexual experiences with children, that was the final straw.
Dr. Marie raises her eyebrows.
That was it.
But that's not the end of the fallout. 1 month after the story's publication, the Dalai Lama relieves his personal emissary of his duties, due in part for connecting His Holiness with Nexium.
The exterior of a blue townhouse.
That November, Raniere flees his New York home.
Allison hugs woman.
Months later, a core group of followers, including Nancy Salzman's daughter Lauren and Allison Mack, disappear as well. No one knows where they've gone.
He has some of his kind of close circle with him, and they're hiding out in a Mexican villa. And so people recognized him almost immediately. Oh, it's that guy from every newspaper and every news story. And so they alert the police.
Puerto Vallarta.
On March 26, 2018, the Mexican National Police stormed the luxury beachfront villa Raniere and his most faithful followers are hiding out in.
Keith hears the Federales start to storm the compound, and he decides to hide while Lauren Salzman decides to try to talk to the police.
Lauren freaks out, obviously, because there's a ton of cops. She tries to kind of calm things down. She tries to say he's not there.
They say, "Let us in and we'll show you the warrant." She refuses, so naturally they break down the door.
Police aim guns. She raises her hands.
She gets on her knees and there's machine guns put at her head. And she's basically willing to put it on the line for Keith.
A woman covers her head.
And Keith, the exceptional deity leader, is hiding just curled up in the bottom of a closet, reduced to basically the fetal position.
Footage of arrest.
He was handcuffed. And then he went away.
Everything is falling apart, and you've got this inner circle of Keith trying to do damage control now.
Huh? Lauren's coming. Let's go, you guys.
Police car drives away. Headline reads, leader of secretive NY Nexium group arrested. Rick Allen Ross.
I was relieved that it ended peacefully. The women were fanatically devoted to him. I think they would have had a gun battle with authorities if he had told them to. Like David Koresh.
Waco Fire.
Like Jim Jones.
Jonestown Massacre.
He was more like Charlie Manson. He didn't do a last stand.
Dr. Marie.
When I saw that Keith was arrested, I was just like, hallelujah! Yay, yay, yay! There is some justice.
Ranieri is brought back to the federal courthouse in Brooklyn to await trial for a litany of federal crimes, including racketeering and sex trafficking.
After that, everything just started falling apart like a domino effect.
FBI dog.
The FBI raid the home of Ranieri's co-founder, Nancy Salzman, and arrest her as well.
Robert Gavin.
In Nancy Salzman's basement, there's boxes with files of information on the enemies of Nexium. That includes six federal judges, the editor of the Times Union, reporters of the Times Union, Rick Ross, the cult tracker, and Edgar Bronfman.
Some of the inner circle is either arrested or about to be. People know who they are.
Including Ranieri's most trusted lieutenant, Allison Mack.
Allison Mack was a master to many different slaves. She tricked into joining DOS under the guise of it being a sorority that was supposed to help people.
Watching the women who are involved in Jeunesse completely transform and evolve in a way that is so pure is such a privilege.
And these slaves, they're just pawns in a game.
Headlines about sex trafficking.
After Keith gets arrested, people leave in droves. I mean, no one wants to be connected to Nexium anymore.
And the only one kind of left in charge is Claire Bronfman.
As Keith Ranieri's trial slowly approaches, some doubt prosecutors will make a convincing case against him. After all, he's skirted justice before.
Who's victim, who's perpetrator? Which is always a difficult question when it comes to cults. Because technically, all of them are victims of Keith to some degree. But at what point do you stop being a victim and become a perpetrator?
A photo of Charles Manson.
Not since Charles Manson and his family stood trial in 1971 for their heinous crimes has a cult and its leader been held so publicly accountable for their actions. Will Ranieri and his acolytes face the same fate?
Members walk to court.
On May 4th, 2018, Keith Ranieri appears in federal court in Brooklyn and pleads not guilty to all charges.
A courtroom sketch.
Ranieri's attorney asks for a $10 million bond for his release pending trial. But the judge, knowing Ranieri has deep pockets in the Bronfman sisters, orders him held without bail.
A prisoner dances in a window.
While Ranieri awaits his day in court, his most loyal confidants begin to fall. On March 12, 2019, Nexium co-founder Nancy Salzman pleads guilty to one count of racketeering conspiracy for harassing and surveilling critics and former members of Nexium.
The sentencing of Nancy Salzman, they brought up, this is the number two unquestionable, the mother of all things Nexium. And she was under tremendous pressure to continue to satisfy Keith Ranieri.
Salzman is sentenced to 3.5 years in prison, fined $150,000, and made to forfeit several properties as well as more than $500,000.
The press follows Allison to court.
1 month later, actress Allison Mack also pleads guilty to charges of racketeering and racketeering conspiracy relating to her actions in the DOS sex cult.
Allison, are you guilty or are you a victim?
Allison Mack was herself a victim. You talk about drinking the Kool-Aid, I think Allison Mack was swimming in the Kool-Aid. She was probably his most devoted follower.
Even though I've been your student for years and I get to spend all this time with you, I feel like there's always such a wealth that I can...
But when you have the opportunity to put a bright light on me and just question...
Yeah, exactly.
What the hey?
But others say the line isn't so clear.
You start to become a perpetrator and not a victim when you're capable of understanding right from wrong. And you know what the repercussions are, but you're going to do it anyway. And when you start to enjoy the amount of pain that you're inflicting on others, then you're no longer a victim, you're a perpetrator.
Allison sings on stage.
If I ever hurt you, baby.
Dun, 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 dun.
Well, you know, I hurt myself as well.
Actress Allison Mack leaving court with her head down after being sentenced to 3 years in prison for her role in Nexium.
Is that any way for a woman to carry on?
Outside the U.S. courthouse, Brooklyn.
Then on May 7th, 2019, over two decades after Nexium first began, the man once known as Vanguard finally stands trial.
He was indicted on seven counts. There was human trafficking and sex trafficking. The interesting thing is that they did not try to prove it was a cult. That would have been a losing argument from the start. There is no criminal statute that makes a cult a crime. It was about coercion. It was about sex. It was about Keith Raniere's pleasures. It was a business, and it was a con job.
A girl looks at the ocean.
Even Daniela, the Mexican teen Raniere kept sequestered in a windowless bedroom, testifies against the cult leader. For his part, Raniere chooses not to testify in his own defense.
An empty jury box.
Then, on June 19th, 2019, after a six-week trial, the jury begins deliberating the alleged cult leader's fate.
We float near Brooklyn Bridge.
On June 19th, 2019, a jury of his peers lowers the boom on Keith Raniere.
Guilty headline.
Keith was convicted on multiple felonies, including trafficking, sex trafficking, trafficking for forced labor, conspiracy. They hit him with a racketeering charge. They really got him for everything.
No, not the result we were hoping for. I can't say I'm terribly surprised. I
was speechless. Not a lot of cult leaders or coercive control leaders have actually been convicted for their crimes. So it was really landmark in that case.
Dr. Joseph.
For his victims, when you see this person in a court of law, he just looks like a mere mortal. And that leads you to realize that you were traumatized, that you were victimized. And so it's powerful to be held accountable because it brings a sense of closure for his victims.
For him to be guilty across all counts, I mean, it renews your faith. You know that if you persist, you know, and you persevere, that justice can be served.
Reporters surround Keith and his attorneys on the way to court.
At his sentencing hearing on October 27th, 2020, Raniere finally speaks about the case.
It's true. I am not remorseful for the crimes I don't believe I've committed at all. But I am deeply remorseful of this pain. I am truly sorry.
Paige Wesley.
His statement was basically, I'm sorry you felt that way, but I didn't do anything. He still maintains his innocence the entire time.
For his litany of crimes, Raniere is sentenced to 120 years in prison.
Seth Ducharme, former acting U.S. attorney.
To have a jury of peers hear what had happened to the victims and to say, essentially, that will not stand was very satisfying, you know, for the government. And I hope gave some measure of justice to the victims.
Lauren Salzman walks to court.
Nancy Salzman's daughter, Lauren, turns state witness against Raniere. She receives no jail time, only probation.
There are people that will sometimes say to me, how come she got no time in jail? Well, because she basically took a knife and cut the snake's head off. That's why Lauren Salzman got no time in jail. You can question whether or not she deserved to go to jail or not. You can't question the job she did at trial. I mean, she destroyed Nexium and Keith Raniere.
Claire Bronfman walks to court.
Claire Bronfman is sentenced to 81 months in prison for conspiracy to conceal and harbor aliens for financial gain and fraudulent use of personal identification information.
Headlines about Claire.
9 former Nexium members testify against Claire.
Claire Bronfman was an enabler. She was the one that kept the machine running. She lubricated it with her money. Over $100 million, according to many reports.
Without the Bronfman money, I think we could certainly wonder if Nexium ever becomes what it became. And I do think that's probably a big reason why the judge gave her 81 months, 3 times the maximum of her guideline sentence.
Claire's mugshot.
Authorities determined Sarah Bronfman, Claire's sister, was not as involved in the organization and therefore declined to charge her.
A photo of the sisters.
In the end, the devastation Raniere inflicted on all those in his orbit far exceeds the cult's 20-year existence.
I've been doing this for close to 40 years, and I've studied and heard about so many cults, but he's at the top of my list of really abusive, evil cult leader. He was a pedophile, a sexual abuser, a misogynist. There's hardly a label you can't apply to him, I'm sorry to say.
A video of Keith teaching.
When it came to being a manipulator, he was a savant. He could smell weakness. He could really identify what were the critical weaknesses in people, their vulnerabilities, and he would drill down into that and crack them open. He was very, very adept at that.
Kelly Teal.
There's no one person or one thing out there that's going to have the answer for you. It's all right here. And I learned that the hard way.
She nods and gets teary-eyed. Text, Nancy Salzman is currently serving her 42-month sentence at the Federal Correctional Institution in Hazleton, West Virginia. Allison Mack is currently serving her 3-year sentence at the Federal Correctional Institution in Dublin, California. Credits, Executive Producer Michael Welsh, Co-Executive Producer Victoria Drew Dewley. Claire Bronfman is currently serving her nearly 7-year sentence at the Federal Correctional Institution in Danbury, Connecticut. Keith Raniere remains behind bars at the U.S. Penitentiary in Tucson, Arizona. He is ineligible for parole and cannot be released before June 27, 2020. Special thanks, Kelly Teal and Tabby Chapman. Fox Alternative Entertainment. Produced for Tubi by Streetcar Entertainment, copyright 2023.